Hello, and welcome back to the Urology Care Podcast, the official podcast of the Urology Care Foundation. May is Women's Health Month, and today we have two guests with us to talk about interstitial cystitis. Our first guest is Terry, who will be sharing her journey as a patient living with interstitial cystitis. Our second guest is Dr. Sutherland, the Director of Female Urology at the University of Washington, who is here to answer some questions about some of the specifics of this condition. Stay tuned at the end of this episode for an Ask the Expert segment, where Terry will get to ask Dr. Sutherland some questions from a patient's perspective. So let's get started. Terry, welcome, and thank you for joining us on today's podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you first came to learn about interstitial cystitis?
Sure. Well, I can tell you I'm almost 50 years old, and I started having symptoms of bladder pain about 25 years ago, so in my early 20s. And I was having urinary tract infection after urinary tract infection, and it just kept going on. I kept going to the doctor, and they kept doing tests, and there was no urinary tract infection. I thought I was having infections, but I really was not having infections. It was just constant bladder pain and urgency to go. I was going multiple times during the day. I had burning pain in my bladder. I was getting up at night, going to the bathroom constantly, and I didn't know what was going on. And at the time, 25 years ago, we didn't have the internet. So I looked in the yellow pages out of desperation. I looked in the yellow pages and I was looking up urologists. And this one urologist had under his description of specialties, cystitis. And I knew that there was a connection between UTIs and cystitis. And so I said, all right, I'm just going to call this doctor and see if he can help me. And so I ended up going to him, and he asked me a couple questions and said, do you have pain in your bladder all the time? And I said, yes. And he said, do you have pain when you go over bumps when you're in a car? And I said, yes. And he asked me a few more questions, and he said, you know, I think we need to look inside your bladder. I think you have something called interstitial cystitis. I had never heard of it, didn't know what it was. And I said, okay, I trust you. Let's do this. I want to figure this out, because it was so disruptive in my life. I was in so much pain. Intimacy was almost off the table at that point. I just didn't know what to do. And so I went in and had a cystoscopy where he went in, looked inside my bladder, put water in there, took a bunch of pictures, did a little biopsy to see if there was cancer in there. And then, you know, when I came out of that surgery, he said, let me show you the pictures of the inside of your bladder. And he showed me those pictures, and there were little red dots all over the inside of my bladder. And he said, these are ulcers or lesions on the inside of your bladder, and you do have interstitial cystitis. And I was like, okay, at least I have a diagnosis. I know what's going on. Now what? Now what do we do? And he said, well, there's this treatment called DMSO. And you come into the office, and we put in a catheter, and we put in a solution into your bladder for about 20 minutes. It sits there, and it could possibly heal your bladder. And so I was like, you know, I was working my first job at the time. I was like, oh my God, am I going to be able to take off time to do this? But I didn't care, because I was in so much pain that I just went ahead and did it, and had to get a doctor's note and the whole thing. So I would go in there, you know, for like 6 to 8 weeks and have this done. They would put the solution in my bladder, and it was so painful to have anything in my bladder at the time, but I knew that I could possibly have some healing from this. And so I did it week after week after week, and it did help me. And then he also gave me information on an elimination diet, things that I could take out of my diet that could possibly be irritating the inside of my bladder, like caffeine, alcohol, you know, citrus, tomatoes, anything acidic helped. And then years down the road, I ended up going to therapy and doing some stress reduction techniques and things. That also helped me. But I started taking some allergy medication. And it was the weirdest thing that all of a sudden I noticed, you know, my IC has gotten a little better. And I started taking another allergy medication and it got even better. I said, wow, this is pretty amazing. And now I'm at a point in my life where it's tolerable, but it's still extremely painful when I go through flare-ups. So I will go through periods of time where I will have to continually go to the bathroom over and over and over again. I will have to do better at my elimination diet. I don't always do great at it, I have to admit. You know, those times are few and far between for me, thank God. Some women deal with this constantly day in and day out. It's extremely painful and very disruptive in their lives. So, you know, for me, it was really finding the right urologist. It was a stroke of luck for me, really. And I was very blessed to find the right person. But there's a lot of women that haven't found the right person, and they're living with this day in and day out. And it's a horrible situation for them.
Terry, thank you so much for sharing your story. Can you give any advice based on your experience to those who think they may have interstitial cystitis and are seeking guidance?
Sure. I can say for me, it was really finding the right urologist, finding the doctor that really knew what was going on with me and that was ready to figure it out and diagnose it and then have treatment options for me. So if you don't feel comfortable with whoever you're seeing now, try a different urologist. It's okay to get a second opinion or a third opinion. It's your body and you have to advocate for yourself. That's really my biggest piece of advice. And that's for any type of disease that you're dealing with or any kind of condition. You know, we have to advocate for ourselves and we have to keep pushing. Of course, the internet's full of great information, but a really good urologist is really going to point you in the right direction and help you get to where you need to be in a place where you can find some comfort, hopefully, at some point.
Thank you for that advice, Terry. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with us before we talk with Dr. Sutherland?
The one thing I would say is that urologyhelp.org, the Urology Care Foundation website, has some really good interstitial cystitis information on there that's downloadable for patients or anyone that thinks they possibly have that. And then there's also a Find Urologist button that you can go and you can actually put in your address and find a urologist that's near you. And it actually lists out the specialties of that particular doctor. So I would encourage anyone that thinks they might have it or does have it and needs a specialist, go on there because it's a great resource.
Great. Thank you so much, Terry. Dr. Sutherland, I want to first welcome you on our podcast today, and thank you for taking the time to speak with us about this topic.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be able to contribute to this discussion.
Could you please start by talking about your background and your connection to interstitial cystitis, or IC, as we'll be referring to it?
Yes, I am a urologist. I specialize in female urology at the University of Washington, director of female urology there. And so under that umbrella of things that I see includes IC, interstitial cystitis. So I've treated a number of patients certainly over the years. I've been in practice for almost 20 years. So I've seen some of these treatments sort of come and go, some of the things that Terry just spoke about, and I've seen many patients just like Terry and have had to try to find some treatment options for them.
Thank you, Dr. Sutherland. As you know, we just spoke with Terry, who shared her story of living with IC. So could you start by explaining for our listeners what this condition is exactly?
Yes. Terry did a nice job of describing it from a patient's perspective, really, so you can get a flavor of what it feels like to have IC. But first and foremost, and she pointed this out as well by her description, it's a pain syndrome that's associated with urinary voiding issues as well. According to the American Urological Association, as well as our Society of Urodynamics and Female Urology, it's defined as an unpleasant sensation, whether it's pain, pressure, discomfort in that suprapubic area that's perceived by the patient to be associated with the urinary bladder and associated with some kind of lower urinary tract symptoms or voiding symptoms for more than 6 weeks duration. And of course, in the absence of any other identifiable causes, such as infection or tumor or stones in the bladder, anything else that would be irritating the bladder, because it's really what we call a diagnosis of exclusion. So we're excluding other things in our diagnosis that could be causing the bladder to form in an irritated way. I feel like I have to go to the bathroom frequently, or I'm having this pain and that makes me feel like I have to go to the bathroom. I feel better when it's not so full. And we're trying to exclude anything else that we think could be organically causing those irritated voiding symptoms. And when we excluded those big categories as infection or malignancy or stone, then what we're usually left with is a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning interstitial cystitis.
Okay, and how common is this condition?
Well, I would say we don't really have great numbers on it, so I can't give you absolute statistics, because when you look at some older papers, the definition of IC has changed as we've understood it a little bit better. But many times women were falsely labeled as having interstitial cystitis just because they went to the bathroom all the time and they said, you must have IC. But then there wasn't any type of pain component associated with it. Or maybe intermittently they had a little dysuria, but it wasn't really true symptoms like Terry described, where the pain is the motivating factor to get you to void all the time. And it really is this constant sensation of pain that's in the bladder that sometimes worsens when there's urine in it, which is really truly what we think of as interstitial cystitis. So I think the numbers that are reported in the literature in times, you know, historically have far over exaggerated what the potential numbers are. You know, in one way we can say it's not as common as we think, and it depends on how we define really that IC and what kind of categories underneath IC we have.
So who is affected by IC? Is it just women, or can it affect men as well?
No, we see it in men as well. We think of it predominantly in women. We do see more women that are diagnosed with interstitial cystitis, but those of us who've seen also men, you wonder if there are men that are limping along with these types of symptoms, but oftentimes being attributed to prostatic issues. Chronic prostatitis, or maybe chronic orchalgia goes along with it, testicular pain. And really they have this syndrome that would incorporate some type of interstitial cystitis like a diagnosis. But we definitely can see it in men as well.
I know you talked about this a little bit already, but can you go into more detail about how IC is commonly diagnosed and treated in patients?
Well, as I said, it really is a diagnosis of exclusion, right? So we're excluding any other things that are irritating the bladder. But when we sort of conceptualize then what is IC, and then how do we find out what the underlying problem is so that then we can move forward with the right type of treatment for that patient, we often find, you know, there are, we like to think of them in six different phenotypes of patients, depending on what the primary issue is that's causing those symptoms. Because remember, again, it's really a clinical syndrome of symptoms. I got to go to the bathroom. I'm having this unpleasant pain in the bladder area of unknown diagnosis, so to say, that are traditional. So the different phenotypes are really, one is could be what we call adult dysfunctional elimination syndrome. It's just they have almost like this overactive bladder type. The second one we refer to as pelvic floor dysfunction, hypertonus or myalgia of the pelvic floor. Those muscles are really tense and transmitting irritation to the bladder, and the bladder, that's their response. But the issue really is in those pelvic floor muscles. The third one is post-UTI hypersensitivity. Somebody who gets urinary tract infections, and truly Terry alluded to that, but then could very well be that she had some urinary tract infections, but then down the road, those symptoms, they didn't go away. She developed this hypersensitivity to the repeat insult of getting urinary tract infections, such that now she still has those symptoms, but in the absence of an infection, and went over and over again and found there was no infection, but still having those symptoms. We do see that this repeat insult and those sensory receptors just develop this hypersensitivity type of phenomenon. Another one is the sort of classic interstitial cystitis, bladder hypersensitivity, but we look inside the bladder and there's nothing wrong with the bladder. That's what oftentimes people thought of as this bladder pain syndrome, but now we sort of use that synonymously with interstitial cystitis in general, which is different from the patients who you look inside their bladder. They have exactly the same symptoms, but they have problems in the bladder, much like what Terry described. We call those Hüner's lesions or Hüner's ulcers and glomerulations, but there are things in the lining of the bladder that are problematic that then over a long period of time can even cause a contracted bladder that doesn't expand very well. So the treatment there would be more geared towards the bladder lining and improving it or injecting things into those ulcers like steroids or medications that make those ulcers feel better. And then the last one is just the generalized chronic pain syndrome. So patients that do have generalized pain in a variety of places throughout the body and then the bladder included. So I know that was a lot, but when you think about these six different phenotypes, it helps you to think about where does the patient fall here and what do I think is really a big part of her problem? And so what type of treatment should we be using? The vast majority of patients, I would say, however, require multimodality therapy, right? So it's not just take this fancy pill and you'll be fixed. It's a combination of looking at dietary recommendations that Terry mentioned, some of the most common ones, pelvic floor physical therapy, relaxation techniques in the pelvic floor muscles, and overall stress reduction techniques. Certainly other things that involve some medications, some just standard overactive bladder medications, and then other ones that get into things that Terry also mentioned, like antihistamine medications, or some things like Elavil, antidepressants is what the medication I wanted to say. It is an antidepressant, but it has a little bit of an anticholinergic effect to it and can help the bladder. And then we get into some other therapies that we do, such as DMSO instillation into the bladder, hydrodistension of the bladder, and other things like that. So there are a variety of things. Of course, there's always pain medications, right? We can always give the patient pain medications and help her get her pain to go away, but that's not a long-term fix. We need to address the pain as we're moving through the treatment options to find what kind of package of multimodal therapy is going to work best for that patient, but just treating the pain doesn't do anybody any good. We need to make sure that we're teaching the patient how to take care of some of these things with lifestyle issues. And then when they have flares, come back to the urologist and we can help with doing some other more intervention things to help with the acute flare-ups.
Wow, that was really informative. Thank you so much for that overview. Now, as patients start to seek help for this condition, how can they find the right doctor? Are there certain questions that can help better diagnose IC early on, or what would you recommend from your experience?
Well, I think first and foremost, just finding the right provider who specializes in this. So Terry did mention going online and finding a urologist. I think that that's helpful, but also finding a urologist who specializes in this kind of therapy, because you want someone who's committed to helping the patient for the long haul. Again, this isn't something that it's just a quick fix and you send the patient on their way and have a happy life. It really is, most of the time, it's a long-term management, as many chronic pain syndromes are. And so having an invested provider who's going to invest in you to help you find the appropriate multimodality therapy that's going to be beneficial for you and help you keep you on that track. And then also be able to be there for you when you do have flares, the self-help things you're doing for whatever reason aren't working. And, you know, that's just the nature of interstitial cystitis. Sometimes there are things in life that flare us. And that's how the interstitial cystitis patient then responds with a flare of pain symptoms in the bladder. And so being able to have somebody invested in you to be able to call and say, I'm having a flare and where are we going to go with this? We're going to go to the operating room and look for Hunter's ulcers, inject some steroids or some other things in the Hunter's ulcers? Are we going to change my medication a little bit, or what are we going to do? And then again, in patients who have severe problems where a lot of the therapy just doesn't work sufficiently, then we're looking at doing some other bigger things for the patients, sometimes involving some other interventions or trials of neuromodulation has been discussed, although there's no real absolute studies to show that it's absolutely helpful in the interstitial cystitis patient. There are some anecdotal thoughts about that, as well as some other types of therapy. And then, of course, some urinary diversion cystectomy, removing the bladder if it's really that painful, and some other creative surgeries like that, but they involve a lot.
Dr. Sutherland, you talked a lot about various treatments and things patients can do to help manage their symptoms. Are some of those known to be more successful in the treatment or management of IC, or does it depend on the individual patient and severity of their condition?
Yeah, well, I think all patients have to start with the, you know, basic first line therapy things, which are, you know, looking at behavioral modifications, things that they can do on their own, stress reduction, fluids, amounts that they're drinking, and other dietary recommendations. So those, I think, can be very effective, but they are ongoing. And so the patient also has to be motivated to be compliant with those things. And then after that, there are medications, of course, and those in many patients prove to be quite helpful. Those are the ones that I mentioned, the amitriptyline, cimetidine, hydroxyzine is another one. You know, the most common one that people hear about is pentosan polysulfate. The brand name is Elmeron, and that's the one that people see in the literature, although it's the only one that's really been, you know, marketed for interstitial cystitis over the years, although at best we see maybe a 30 to 40% response rate when patients use it. So we really see that it's not the be all end all. And so, you know, we need to keep looking. So besides the oral agents, then some of the intravesical agents. So Terry pointed out nicely the DMSO, how it worked for her. The downside is that it is usually quite painful when patients get it instilled and they feel miserable before they feel better. And then it doesn't last. And so you've got it coming up on you again. It's once a week, usually for 6 weeks. And then, you know, it lasts maybe up to about 6 months or less. And so you're having to have that done repeatedly. So when we look in our urological literature, really, and peer-reviewed journals, there's not a lot of really great evidence to show that DMSO works for, you know, the broad spectrum of interstitial cystitis. So if it works for a patient, great. But if it doesn't, then you absolutely just need to move on. So we do see it working in some patients, but when we look at that group as a whole, we don't see it as the panacea for all patients. Other things, of course, lidocaine injections into the bladder, but those are a short fix as well, right? The lidocaine only lasts so long, and once it wears off, it wears off. And then, of course, other things that are have to do with them, the pain management. Pyridium is a medication that we often use to help calm that bladder down. Azo is another one, besides using then really true pain medications. Anti-inflammatories can also be helpful. So Advil, ibuprofen, Tylenol, those kinds of things. And then another one that people don't often think about is like a hydroxyzine, like an antihistamine medication that we use for allergies that Terry pointed out. And so there is one thought that, you know, what is the etiology of interstitial cystitis? And if we understood more about it, we would know exactly how to treat it, but we don't know exactly. You know, one of the thoughts is there some type of underlying autoimmune or allergic reaction that's happening? And so squelching that inflammatory and even that allergic type of reaction with squelching the mast cells with an antihistamine can prove beneficial in some patients.
Lastly, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about IC?
Well, again, I think, you know, first and foremost, we think of it as a pain syndrome, right? So we're really trying to help the patient with her pain issue, and sort of the voiding is kind of secondary, but we need to treat that as well. We need to really evaluate to see what other pelvic dysfunctions are happening, and then even sometimes what other systemic dysfunctions are happening, because oftentimes they can go hand in hand with other chronic pain issues or with patients that have fibromyalgia. Sometimes we see it in combination with patients who have chronic migraine issues. And so we don't really understand why is this connection there, but we do see that patients that sort of have a plethora of all of these different pain issues that are going around in the IC or the bladder component is just part of it, which leads us to more of that central issue. Should our therapy be directed just at the bladder or more centrally, right? So systemically, I mean, I should say not centrally, but systemically. And so again, it's really the patients who are successful for the most part are really looking at all of these different categories, behavioral things, exercise, diet things, then some medications. And then sometimes even when I'm having a flare, I have to have some of these other treatments to get me back on track, and trying to stay whole with all of those things and keep them all going. It really is multimodality therapy is what we keep saying, but that's so true. And the patients need to understand that from the get-go, that there's not just one magic pill, unfortunately. But there is therapy, so I don't want them to lose hope, but just to find a therapist or a provider who's going to work with them as time goes on.
We are here now with both Terry and Dr. Sutherland for our Ask the Expert segment, which is designed to highlight patient questions. So Terry, I will hand it over to you to get started.
You know, it's so interesting, Dr. Sutherland, what you just said about having additional conditions, because that's so true for me. I have endometriosis and I also have chronic migraine. And I also have a heart condition that deals with vasospasms. And so, you know, I just asked my PCP about this. I was like, do you think that the IC has any connection with the rest of these conditions? And she said, you know, I don't know, but it's a really interesting thing to think about. And I've thought about that over the years. Is this all connected to one thing? And I wonder why the histamines helped me. Do you know why?
Well, there are different thoughts about the etiology of what's causing interstitial cystitis. And again, they're thoughts, right? And you, we're not able to categorize or say one thought is correct for all patients, but we see these little different bubbles of patients. And one is that there is this, you know, mast cell response, which is what we get with an allergic reaction. So that's where the whole idea of using sort of antihistamines came about, by saying, well, why don't we try to block these mast cells? And then you don't get that downstream inflammatory reaction if you're blocking that, the mast cells and the allergy type reaction. So that's how it's working. It doesn't work in all patients. It's working for you. So you're in that category, a bubble of IC patients, so to speak, right? That's kind of how I think about them, because no two IC patients are the same. And that was that point. I know it was a lot of information, but to think about the six phenotypes, you know, meaning the six different types, like what do we think is really the big problem that's going on here for us to direct our therapy? And the reality is there's usually more than one, and sometimes even more than two, right? Sometimes three or four, but we look at those different categories and it helps us in our mind to think, okay, where should we start with this patient? But that's why I think you're in that allergy bubble, so to speak. And to speak to the endometriosis, you know, there's a lot we don't know about endometriosis too, right? And so, okay, we go in with these scopes and we look into the abdomen area and we see these endometrial implants is what they're called. And then they get burned off. Sometimes the patients do better and sometimes they don't. So it's not the, you know, ultimate answer either. We don't know. So I'm not a gynecologist. I'm not doing endometriosis per se or the treatment for that, but you know, again, in some patients, it's very helpful, but what the common denominator in those kinds of patients is the pain. Right. So, but where's the pain coming from? Is it really from those endometrial implants, or is there something else going on? Because why can you get rid of the endometrial implants in some patients and they still have just as much pain as they did when you started, and others get better and they say, oh, it fixed me completely, right? So again, there's going to be different bubbles of phenotypes. And so if it's causing some pelvic pain can cause bladder pain. Is it the same pain? Is it different? Does one beget the other, the chicken or the egg? But again, it's underneath that big umbrella of pain syndromes again.
So the pelvic floor therapy, I've heard about this, but I don't know what it is. And it sounds like for some women, it could be a miracle cure. What does it involve?
So the pelvic floor physical therapy, just like any physical therapy, deals with the muscles and the structural elements. So muscles and the bones and so on and so forth. But a physical therapist would look at the structural components of the pelvis. And so people think of it as just the muscles around the vagina that are holding all of that in. And they are, those are those pelvic floor muscles. But where do those pelvic floor muscles attach? They attach to the hips. They attach to the pubic bone, they attach to the spine and the back, right? And that's how they cradle everything and hold everything in. So if you have some problems with the lower back issue, it totally can spark issues in those pelvic floor muscles and spasming in those muscles. Same thing if you have a chronic hip issue, same thing. Those muscles then are really tense. And those nerves that go to the muscles are the same nerves or branches thereof of the pelvic plexus nerves that go to the bladder. And so sometimes the bladder can be the innocent bystander, but it's picking up all of this crosstalk from those nerves that are coming from your bum hip. And the bladder says, I got to go, I got to go, right? And so we don't always see that, you know, so simple from A to B when it comes to interstitial cystitis, but it can certainly influence some of those bladder symptoms. And so the therapy is really getting in there and doing some good core work. Work on the muscles, work on the joints, making sure the SI joints are even and too tight on one side needs more flexibility, too weak on the other side needs a little more strength. And then what we also think of are people that have more familiarity with this also realize that there often can be a transvaginal component to it. So fingers in the vagina and massaging and manipulating the muscles those are the pelvic floor muscles in the vagina. It's just if you had, you know, a Charlie horse in your leg, you would rub it and knead it and massage it and move it, right? And so that's what you're doing with those pelvic floor muscles. And sometimes there's too deep and hard to get at through other types of external exercises, and having a good pelvic floor physical therapist, again, who specializes in this area, who can get down deep to the attachment points and in the belly of the muscle and really, really massage it. And then down the road, you know, the idea is also teach the woman how to do some of those exercises and even transvaginal massage yourself. You can use a dilator to allow you to reach some of those deep points and just use it like a rolling pin, but doing a little different way through the vagina to get in there and really work those muscles. That's generally what we think of when we send someone to pelvic floor physical therapy that has this high tone, hypertonus is the word we use, pelvic floor muscles. And we need those muscles to stop being so tense and just relax and live at a normal tone level, because all of that high tension is causing all of those symptoms. You can imagine if you're walking around just totally tense all the time, how hard that is, right? And tiring, and that's hard. And you don't perceive it as a person walking around, but you certainly can be evaluated by a pelvic floor physical therapist for that.
Well, Terry and Dr. Sutherland, thank you for this incredibly informative discussion on interstitial cystitis and for taking the time to be on today's episode of the Urology Care Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was fun. And I guess I put another plug in for the Urology Care Foundation. Thanks for doing this, and also that the wealth of resources for patients too. A lot of what we talked about, I know, is a lot and complicating, but it's sort of spelled out in a lot of those educational pamphlets and information on the website. So patients, please go check them out.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Urology Care Foundation, the official foundation of the American Urological Association. For more information on today's topic and for all things urology health, visit urologyhealth.org. That's urologyhealth.org.